quiet, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does. If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the word. So he has numerous things that he touches on. And he's going to go into more detail into it in James. So he's kind of got an introduction into this particular letter that goes through and hits on a bunch of things. And you will see, we get into chapter 2, chapter 3, we'll go into more detail on some of these things. But that's kind of the way James organized his letter that he had. And it's a general epistle that's gone out to a lot of folks. So let's take a little bit at the details. In the first part, this you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. So he's touched on anger on this particular one. What do you think is going on that he sees? Why would he write this? Well, that's the part of it is the part about self is that I think is going on probably in the church right now, is people, there's factions. And that's probably a little bit of what James is addressing here is the fractionalization within the churches, and people are getting angry, they're taking sides, and he's saying you need to stop that. First of all, you need to listen to each other. I had a couple questions. What does it mean to be quick to hear and slow to speak? What's the first thing you have to do if you're going to be quick to hear? Huh? What's the first thing you have to do if you want to be quick to hear? That's right. You got to shut up. Okay? And you've got to listen. You got to listen to what the person actually is saying and understand it and process it. And slow to speak kind of goes along with that, doesn't it? That's why I put the two together up there, is if you're swift to hear, in other words, you really want to hear what the other person's side is, and then you're going to be slow to speak, because when they get through saying whatever they're saying, are you going to speak right away? Or you got to think about what they said, don't you? So that slow to speak is, okay, I heard what you said. And the first thing you might say, a lot of times I use this, is to say, this is what I heard you say. This is what I think you said.
I like to say in that the Lord knew what he was doing when he gave us two of these and one of these.
Well, that's people like to say that, yeah. You got this one, you got a backup. What is it being, I changed it around. What is it being slow to hear and quick to speak? That's trouble. Well, have you ever had a conversation where you feel like either you are or the other person is just waiting the opportunity for you to stop talking so they can make their point? Well, debates, but at least debates, you're listening to the other person's side. But when somebody's sitting there going, okay, blah, 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 I hear you talking, and I'm waiting for you to quit talking, and as soon as you quit talking, I'm going to say what I have to say. You talk over people, you do all those kinds of things if you're not listening, right? Because you want to make your point. You want to make your point. That's the problem you have when someone who is very quick to speak. They're waiting for the other person to stop, and you don't ever hear the other person's point of view, do you? You never hear it. Is it wrong to be angry?
No, it's a normal emotion, but if you don't control it, you do something.
It's a good point. If you don't control it, you will do something you will regret. Later on, you'll reflect on it and you go, man, I shouldn't have done that. I really shouldn't have done that. What's the anger of man? Because that's how he puts it here. What's the anger of man? You see it every day, okay. He was in control. Why was he angry?
Because of what they had done to the temple.
To his father's house. Okay. It wasn't because of himself. What's the anger of man? You're not getting what you want. It's, I didn't get my way. As opposed to, what are we supposed to be doing? We're supposed to love each other? The anger of man is, I'm not getting my way. I'm not getting what I want. So how do we handle anger? That. We got any guidance? Yeah, we do. Well, yeah, you have to admit it. Okay, you have to acknowledge you're getting mad. One, two, three, right? How about what we've got in Ephesians? Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth to each other, to each one of you with his neighbor, for he remembers one another. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity. What's the big take away from that? And what happened with the Hatfields and McCoys? If you went to them and said, what started this feud? What would they say? We don't remember. We don't remember. What happens? You ever hear of making a mountain out of a molehill? Okay. It started small. Whatever the thing was that made you angry, started small. Usually it starts small. What happens to it after you let it sit there and fester and simmer? It gets bigger. Don't you start making stuff up in your mind to say, you know, if I say this, I'll bet they'll say that. And you go through an argument in your head, and you've never even talked to the person. Exactly. You are. Because he can use that. That's an emotion he can use. He likes that emotion. Yeah. Who'd God warn about anger and that anger leading to sin? You got it. He did. Genesis. Go through all of this. They have, first of all, they have gave birth to Cain. He was the older brother. And then they gave birth to Abel. And in verse 4, Abel on his part also brought the firstlings of his flock and of the fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offerings, but for Cain and for his offering he had no regard. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell. Then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it.
He didn't sin yet.
No, he hadn't. He was mad. Why was he mad? Yeah. He did. He said, hey, you liked Abel's, you didn't like mine. Now, we've gone into detail in the past as far as why he liked one versus he didn't like the other, but Abel offered his as a part of Why did he offer his offering? Cain. Compulsion. Yeah. Abel offered it, and you look in Hebrews, Abel offered it through faith. Cain didn't. So you have the difference. And that was the motivation behind the offering was what was the problem. But Abel got mad. Why? Cain got mad. Why? Because it was against me. It didn't work out his way. Okay. And he said, look, it's crouching at the door. It's going to get you. And it got him. Well, he was mad at Abel. Was it Abel's fault? No. Wasn't Abel's fault at all. But I figured if I eliminate the competition, then I'll be number one. He was the older brother. You can. Yep. You can. He can do something. He thinks he can do something about this situation, doesn't he? But he thinks he can do something about this situation. But he can't. He could if his heart was in the right spot. Let's move on. Therefore, putting aside all filthiness and all that remains of wickedness, in humility receive the word implanted, which is able to save your souls. Simple. What does it mean, filthiness? The Greek word refers to dirt or soil. What does it mean? Huh? World filth? Moral filth. Okay, that's probably a little closer. That's more of an interpretation. But what do you think it's saying there? Well, what he's trying to say here is your spirit. Don't stain your spirit. Don't stain yourself from a moral standpoint. He's using a physical thing to describe what he doesn't want us to do from a spiritual standpoint. He doesn't want us to spot ourselves with the world. How about remains of wickedness? And somebody may have superfluity of naughtiness. That's in the King James. What does that mean? All that remains of wickedness. What's going on in the world? All that's going on, you know. A lot of these people James is addressing this letter to is being circulated not to just the Jews, but it's a general epistle, right? It's being circulated around everybody. Remains of wickedness is the things that they did that people keep trying to bring in. How familiar is this word that James is addressing? Parts of it have gone around into the empire. Certainly the roads that they have there allows people to move places to places and speak of the word. They should be familiar. I like the word that it uses there is implanted. In other words, or grafted. What happens when you graft something onto a tree? It becomes part of the tree. But the old tree is still kind of there a little bit, isn't it? The roots. This has been implanted into them, and they're having to get rid of the stuff that's part of that original root and let what's been planted in, what's been grafted in, grow. That's kind of the visual that he's trying to paint with this one. But prove yourselves doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. Yep. Some people are good talkers. What is a hearer of the word? Versus a doer. Huh?
A hearer of the word is someone who listens and does it. A true hearer.
No, the one he says here, look at the way his context is, be a doer, not a hearer. What's a hearer? Possibly. A self-righteous person, a hypocrite. I'm repeating because I'm not sure everybody can hear.
They say
It may be kind of what you're saying is a talker, somebody who either says everybody ought to do things, or what Mary just said was, she did with her hands, was it goes in one ear and it comes out the other one. They were doing something, weren't they? They weren't doing the right things, but they were doing something. A hearer, I think, is someone who says, he really made some good points this morning, and comments on what maybe Mike says or maybe what the teacher says, but as soon as they leave, it didn't change their life one bit. That's a hearer. They'll be here all the time. They'll listen to it. They'll talk about how great it was. They maybe even post some stuff on Facebook, but it never changes their life. Might be. Yeah. And a hearer may be somebody who says, I put my time in. I put my weekly time in. Yeah, I checkmarked it. Yeah. Yeah. When the cares of the world choked it out, you had the one that threw into the areas that it didn't grow at all. Is being a doer sufficient? Exactly what Clayton says. It depends on why you did it. What did Jesus say about keeping his word? If you love me, you will keep my commandments. I knew you guys were going to say that. So, what is the relationship between loving God and keeping his word? We tend to go to that. We tend to say, that's the proof you love God. You have to prove you love God. That's right. It is. It's the. Would someone mind tell me what time it is? I'm on slide 7. I want to. 9:30? I got 15 minutes. Okay. I pulled this out of John, chapter 14, what it goes on. He goes on to more to say what's here. This is where Jesus is talking to the disciples after he's just got through kind of blasting the Pharisees and what they did. I will not, and this is where he also goes in to say who he's going to send. He's going to send a helper. I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you after a little while the world will no longer see me. You will see me because I live. You will live also. In that day you will know that I am in my Father, and my Father in me, and I in you. He who has my commandments and keeps them is the one who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him, and will disclose myself to him. And jumping down into verse 23, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him. And we will come to him and make our abode with him. He who does not love me does not keep my words, and the word which you hear is not mine, but the Father's who sent me. It speaks for itself. It's kind of interesting who asked the question, isn't it? Judas? But there you've got the relationship there between the two. Moving on into Matthew, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. These people do the God's word? The hearers are, well, they were doing something, weren't they?
Well, they heard.
their heart wasn't in it, okay? I underlined it in 22 three times, in your name. How did they approach it? Let's see what I've got here. Yeah. How did he approach it? Why did he reject them? Weren't they really approaching it as kind of an incantation? If you want to remove a demon, here's what you say, and you use his name, and it gets jerked out of the person. So what were they really doing? Yeah, they were giving credit. They were saying, look at the power I can wield because I know the magic incantations. Their heart wasn't in it. That's what you were saying, Weldon. Their heart was not in it. They weren't trying to serve God. They were trying to use God to serve themselves. Or don't do. And this goes into a little bit more. Everybody knows what these chapters are. This is out of 1 Corinthians. If I speak the tongues of men and angels, but I do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all the mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. If you were to do those things, would be keeping the word of God. Particularly the last part. If I give all my possessions and feed the poor, and I surrender my body to be burned, only if it's done out of love. Remember the rich young ruler came to Christ and he said, I've done all those things. He says, so sell everything you have and give it to the poor. And he says, can't do that. But you're right. Why are things of no value? We did answer that one. It's because it wasn't done in love. The motive was wrong. The underlying drive that makes you do or not do what you do or don't do has to be love. Goes on to talk more. Love is patient. Love is kind. Is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. It does not act becoming. It does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Does not take into account a wrong suffered. So how does love cause us to react to a situation where we would have anger? Going back to that first verse. It does. If you really, really love that person, aren't you going to suffer yourself to be wronged? Well, that would be that you'd forgive them, but to avoid the anger, to say, I am accepting that someone does me wrong, even though I was trying to do good, because I love that person. I'm not provoked because that's part of love. You have to swallow your pride. I do not take into account a wrong suffered. They did me wrong. I love that person still. Oh. Well, there's one. I love this one. This is a little thing. Put your hand up. Either hand. That one. Put up. Put up like that. Put up like that. Okay, I was pushing on his hand. And I pushed on it, and he pushed back. You can put it down now. That's a kind of a natural reaction. I remember I did this once with you, Rufus, and your hand went back. But most people, when you run that little test, and you push harder, they push back. That's in our heads. That's ingrained in us. If somebody pushes us, we push back. You have to fight that, if it's love. He's a lover. But you surprised me, because when I did it, I expected him to push back, and he didn't. He didn't. But that's a natural part of how our brain works, and we have to fight it.
I didn't want you to fall over.
So I did it out. Okay. Moving on into 1 Corinthians. Love never fails, but if there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away. If there are tongues, he goes all the way through there. And he talks about when I was first being done, I saw dimly, now I see clearly. Okay, when things become perfect, when things become complete. But the last verse. But faith, hope, and love abides these three. But the greatest of these is love. Because it's the whole basis on why Christ came. It's the two royal laws. Why is it the greatest? Everything is built on that. If you don't have that as a foundation, it's going to fall apart. Do we have to do the will of God to prove we love God? Well, does it? Can you look in somebody's heart and figure out what's going on? Do we have to prove it to God? No. Well, it may be, but I don't need to. But the thing about it is if we see somebody doing something, because God knows, right? That's what I've got here in these verses in Luke. Christ, at this point, he knew what they were thinking. He knew what their hearts were with the Pharisees. Here, he says, God knows your hearts. God knows what our motivation is. We don't have to prove anything to him. Are we trying to prove it to each other? James uses the words, he says, what you do is a proof that you love. He's doing that as something to say, hey, if I'm not doing anything, how good is my love? But he's not trying to offer up it as a proof, because you can't prove somebody loves someone because they do something, because you can't look in their hearts. Can you? I can't. That's true. I don't expect her to get much farther from the bedroom into the kitchen and back into the bedroom. No. It's not to prove it. So, being acceptable to God, what is the cause and what's the effect? And I think we've touched on it all through this morning. The cause is love. The effect is what you do. I love the thing, I drop this on this and it's got gravity and I let it go, it's going to fall to the concrete and probably not going to do any good for this device either. But it's a natural consequence of love. Not per se a proof, but it's a natural consequence. If you're not doing anything, that love's not there. You're a hearer, right? Isn't that his point? Yep. Yeah, and some people irritate people, some people more than other people do, certainly. And you gotta draw on that love a little bit harder for some people.
And we get this, you know. I mean, Jesus even said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be.
That's right.
And we get that. Every last one of us has something in our life that we love, whether it be a person or our job or whatever. You know, it could be a number.
And the contrast there is, like you said, where you spend your time, what you're doing, indicates where your love is. If you've spent on yourself, where's your love? For yourself, okay? And that's the part of dying when you become a Christian, is you die to yourself. And you're living for him. That's why you offer yourself up as a living sacrifice. And you love him. You love him more than you love yourself. Okay. If anyone is a hearer of the word, not a doer, He is like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. For once he has looked at himself and gone away, he has immediately forgotten what kind of person he was or is. But one who looks intently at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does. So he continues with the theme, hearer versus a doer. And here he's got a contrast that tries to illustrate it. What's the allusion to the man looking in a mirror and not and being a hearer? Yeah, thinking you're looking pretty good, you know, and your hair's like this, and you got stubble, and your hair's sticking up, by the way. No. Yeah, you know, it's the kind of thing where the person, the hearer that he has here is like the person who says, I see what needs to be done, or I see I need to do something, and I walk away. I forget about it. He hears the word. He hears what it said. He understands it. He walks away. It doesn't make any difference in his life. At all. If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. How can the tongue render a person's religion worthless? Okay, could convict you. You're talking on hypocrisy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Here, Paul is talking about, in the first chapter of Romans, people who are not following God. They are doers, but they are doers of their own hearts. And I underlined a bunch of those things. There's a long list in 29 and in 30. And all the ones I underlined are all things you do with your tongue. Well, they could be tongue-related, but I definitely with strife, definitely with deceit. You tell a lie, or you intentionally deceive someone. Malice, certainly gossips, slanderers, people who boast, inventors of evil, coming up with things. That can sow a lot of discord. Even among the church, it can sow a lot of discord. Matter of fact, particularly within the church, it causes factions. It causes people to split different sides and take sides. Be careful. He says, be careful with the tongue. It can really, really cause problems. Yep. For a tiny little part of your body. But there's a point that's made. Hopefully I put it in Matthew. After Jesus called the crowd, he said to him, hear and understand, it is not, and this is where the Pharisees have just gone through, and he's just called the Pharisees what they are. It is not what enters in the mouth that defiles the man, but what proceeds out of the mouth that defiles the man. Then the disciples came and said to him, Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement? But he said to them, every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant shall be uprooted. Let them alone, they are blind, guides of the blind, and if a blind man guides a blind man, both will fall into a pit. There's a duck and bell. Jesus offended the Pharisees here, but he said the truth, didn't he? He said, it doesn't matter how you ceremonially wash, because that's what they were saying. You aren't washing. You aren't washing where the water dripped off their elbows and everything like that. They weren't doing that. But the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart. And those defile the man. Kind of goes back to what we've been talking about all through here is it shows your heart. That tongue will show your heart. And that's why you got to be careful with it. Yes. You speak out and say, you did something wrong. Yep. And this last verse here, pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and our Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep one unstained by the world. We really don't have time to discuss it. You might want to pick that up next week as an introduction into chapter 2. But that was the second bell. Thank you for your time.